B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, hi, everybody. Welcome into the program. It's Felger and Maserati. Wednesday, January 27th. Felger here from the remote A-hole chair location. Maz and Murray back in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Thought we'd start off today talking a little baseball, Hall of Fame ballot, and a little bit of Bruins. So that's what we're going to do in hour number one, and we'll sprinkle it in through the rest of the day as well. But that's all how we'll lead after giving you 8 straight hours of Buccaneers, Packers, and Brady talk. So let's just lead off with that, Maz, and set it right up for you and your reaction to the Hall of Fame ballot last night. Curt Schilling not getting in, and then his angry missive on Facebook.
So I'm not shocked that it ended up the way it ended up when you really look at the data and the way it goes on these things at when they actually announce it. And again, I said to you yesterday, he was 74.5% online. And typically by the time you get to the actual announcement of the results, that number comes down because the people who have not revealed their ballots online tend to be older voters who would hold Schilling's actions against him, or, you know, his performance against him, whatever it was. In my case, it was performance, and it's always been performance. But that aside, to me, the missive that he then issued on Facebook, and look, he's allowed to express himself. What I would say to Schilling, though, is that he's his own worst enemy. He has been from the beginning. And so, and I know that's a lot of what you want to get to, so I'll leave that part of it to you. But when I see Schilling state that he wants to be judged by the Veterans Committee and that he doesn't, quote unquote, think of himself as a Hall of Famer. I'm not a Hall of Famer in my mind, is what he said. Well, then what's he pissed off about? If he's not a Hall of Famer, then why is he mad at the writers on Election Day who voted him 71.1%? Like, okay, so it's not the 75. You're still getting support 7 out of 10. Like, you're close, but you said you don't think of yourself as a Hall of Famer. So what are you angry about then? Why do you want to be judged by another body? Like, if you're not a Hall of Famer, then you wouldn't be upset at the voting. What's the problem? What's the problem? I don't know what happened to this guy. And I was just telling Beadle off the air. You know, when I covered him, I didn't have an issue with Schilling. I liked him. I didn't talk politics with him. But I liked him. I thought he was a tremendous competitor. I thought he was a good guy to have on a team. All of that. So I don't have any personal axe to grind or grudge or any of that. And so now, look, some other guys do. But again, I would say to Schilling, 3 out of every 10. 3 out of every 10 didn't vote. 7 did. So, like, who are you really mad at? I mean, I'm mystified in a lot of ways of what happened to this guy. And I can give you some sort of, you know, guess. And
psychoanalyze.
He made a ton of money, and then he ruined it all. He, you know, whether it was losing the job at ESPN, the venture with 38 Studios in Rhode Island, you know, he lost it all. And so my guess is he is mad at himself, and he is taking it out on other people because we're easy targets.
On the world.
Yes, on the world. Right.
He's angry at the world because he messed up his life.
Because it went wrong for him, right, and by his own hand. And so it's easy to just lash out at the people who are voting and everything else, but I still can't figure out who he's mad at other than himself.
The world. The internet has melted his brain, and he's a horse's ass. And all that being said, just based on his postseason record, if I had a vote, I would put him in. My bigger beef with what happened last night is that nobody got in, and the numbers for guys who should be in, Bonds, Clemens, Manny Ramirez, who, if you watch baseball all during the 90s and 2000s, you would know Manny Ramirez is first ballot and the best right-handed hitter of all time. Their numbers went down. They're never getting in. That's it. And that is just, I mean, that's absurd to me. And that guys like Scott Rolen, who did get votes and who will go in next year, you've made a mockery of this whole thing now. That someone like Craig Biggio gets in. That someone like Larry Walker gets in. It's already a mockery, but now you're gonna come at me with like nerd stats, and that's gonna be the basis of someone like Scott Rolen getting in.
Scott Rolen is the kind of guy that you have to remind people who that is.
Right,
Exactly.
I mean, there's people my age that, you know, followed baseball and know, like, you've got to remind me, who did he play for? What position did he play? Like, I know it, but it's like, you got to, and that's now a Hall of Famer, whole nother story.
Yeah, okay? It is. It's a totally, right, agreed.
The Biggio, Rowland, like, Harold Reynolds, like that. We can talk about that if you want. 617-779-0985. We can talk about the steroid guys if you want. 617-779-0985. But to me, Schilling is, you know, the lead here, the meat of the matter. And it is, it's just a fascinating case study of a guy who's just destroyed himself. I mean, I've almost never seen it. Like, I've seen it in a different context. Like, we see, you'll see boxers, like, make all this money overnight, right? And then just blow it and they're destitute. You know, like, we sort of see that. And that's happened with a couple pro athletes as well. You know, his teammate, Lenny Dykstra, or, you know, again, it happens to boxers all the time. Who is the fatso who played
Antoine
for the Celtics?
Antoine Walker.
You know, so guys like this, I'm sorry, that's how I remember him. But, you know, so you see it. But, it, you know, Schilling did it in a different way. But, boy, he did it. Boy, did he do it. He had it. He had it made. He had it made by the time he was done playing. Tens of millions of dollars in the bank. The adulation, devotion of the most rabid sports fan base in the country in Boston and Red Sox fans. He was the owner of the most important championship just about this town has ever seen. Some would argue the most important championship we have ever had. He was the reason they won it. That old line that you'd never have to buy a drink in this town again. Boy, that was him. That was him. And if he never threw another ball, he could go into that ESPN booth, and he was a terrific analyst again. And this is back when we cared and watched. He was good. That booth was good. With him and Smoltz, and again, I keep forgetting who the play-by-play guy was. Was it Miller? I don't know who it was. I don't care. They were good. He was good in that role. He was a good analyst. He was a good media guy.
Yeah.
He was good with his call-ins, you know, to EEI and whatever. He was always worth listening to. He was a good media guy. He was a great baseball analyst. If he did nothing else, he could just, even after he blew all his money with the video game thing, right, he could make a couple million bucks a year being a baseball analyst. And, you know, that sort of semi-retirement, you're still making a good living. You're still close to the game. He could still be that easily. He was that good at it. And he just can't help himself. He can't. He's one of these guys, like my old line, get off the internet. I think that was for him. I think that was meant for him when I first said that. But boy, does that apply to him. He just can't let anything go. And he's got to fight these battles. And you think about, you know, what did he pee it all away on? So the 38 Studios thing was a business decision and sort of outside of this. That was just, you know, to put all your eggs in one basket when you have that kind of money and put it all into one thing, as risky as that. I mean, that's just a real mistake. But okay, so it happens. I'm telling you, even after that, if he just went into the booth, he could be a media guy making a couple million bucks a year and still have a great life. And what did he blow that on? What did he blow that on?
Twitter.
He blew it on memes and, like,
it was the transgender bathroom issue, I believe, at the time.
Sounds right, Murray, yeah.
Bathroom laws and gender laws and trolling liberals with memes and, like, that's what it was. That's what he blew it on. It wasn't like a real cause. It was, he just can't get off the internet. And think of that. Think to have that kind of life and to just, and to lose it all because of that, because you have zero self-control and you just can't help yourself but engage on things that don't amount to a hill of beans. It just doesn't. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter who's using the bathroom. At least it's not worth over losing your life over.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what he lost his life over. You want to have a stand on it. That's fine. Yes, you can feel a certain way and vote a certain way. But you're gonna lose your livelihood because you have to scratch that itch or you have to continue a war with scrubby baseball writers or you just can't not do it? I mean, the Capitol riots? You're going to riot Capitol Hill over Democrat-Republican. And that's what that's over. Over a Democrat winning over Republican. As opposed to just, you could wait 4 years, Kurt. It sort of goes back and forth. I don't know if you've noticed. Or 2 years, even. You just get them the next time. You could have done that. But instead, it's like you just lose everything because you can't take it. You can't handle it. And I'm just, boy, that's sad. I find him pathetic is what I really do.
No, it is sad. Sad's the right word. Because, again, part of me, I know Murray's going to scoff at this. But, again, I knew him at a different time. Part of me feels bad for him. Because, there were all these things about Schilling when he came, oh, you're going to hate him. He's got an opinion on everything. He wasn't that bad. He was a good enough guy. I didn't agree with him on a lot of things, but it was never to the point where there was this animosity directed at you because you believed something else. It wasn't like that.
I think you have a good point, though, about the 38 studios. Because isn't that a lot of, people are just angry at the world. It's like,
you lost everything.
They've had some sort of hardship in their life. They've lost something. And now there's we're going a deep dive, but I think it's kind of true. It's like, now you're angry at the world.
Yeah.
Everybody ends up like that. I mean, there's countless stories of professional athletes that have lost just about everything and still have found a way to bounce back and not pop off like this guy has, day after day, year after year.
Well, and Mike, to your point, he had a lifeline. I mean, the work on ESPN was a lifeline.
He was good. He was a good media guy.
He is. He was always good to listen to on baseball. Always. I mean, and now, obviously, I don't even know what he's doing, but I know it's online, and I know it's political commentary.
Does he do a Breitbart? Is that what he does, Murray?
I honestly don't know. I've been blocked by him for years. I hear Tutcher and Rich talk about him, and they say he's on Periscope making, like, airplane models.
Yeah, so that's what I mean by online. If you look at his Twitter feed, they're just videos of him sitting at his desk and talking politics.
this guy should be, not that we're doing this topic or that I have a word. Ever would, but he's like he should be a Mount Rushmore kind of Boston sports figure.
Yeah,
like he should be that guy.
Guy that should have never paid for a dinner again in his life. Here,
curse. He should be that guy. It should be exalted, and it's like blown to smithereens.
I mean, stunning. It is the only thing that I can think of that's even close, and it's not the same as Tim Thomas. And I think we talked about this in the past. Like the whole Thomas thing went awry there, and that was. Like, whoa, how did that deteriorate and, blow up the way it did? But I feel like that's been patched.
Yeah, he came back, and not that there's been a big public thing about it, but he did. When they were in the cup the last time, and we thought he was going to wave the flag for game seven, right? But then he subsequently did they do like a cup reunion thing or something on Zoom he was a part of? He's done a couple things, and he's sort of admitted to his mental health problems and where he was at the time and all of this. And not that, he's come back and had his real moment, but I feel like he could. And, Bruins fans, it was bumpy there for a little bit because he sort of went off the deep end. But I think, Bruins fans, I think he's exalted. I think, if he came back to the Garden and walked onto the ice, it'd be a thunderous, it'd be that moment. If Curt Schilling stepped onto the field at Fenway, is it half booze? Is it more than half booze? I mean, what is it?
I think you'd hear real venom. I mean, Tim Thomas at this point, I think, has transformed himself into kind of like a lovable kook, But whereas Curt Schilling is just, some people look at him as like legitimately dangerous.
Yeah, he's unraveled. And, again, part of me feels really badly about it. And that said, I do not regard him as a Hall of Famer. I don't. I never thought he was this either. And it feels to me like it's just completely gone off the rails.
Okay, you want to weigh in on this? You can. We'll use this as a little entree into some Red Sox things that we've left on the table here over the last week. We'll get to that. I do want to get to the Bruins last night and so far this season. So it's all coming up with you at 617-779-0985.
Boston's home for sports. Failure and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
To Felger and Mass on your phone.
I don't care.
With the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
I'm just a sports talk radio host. I'm not a reporter.
Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, everybody. Time to bitch and complain about who Tony Mass thinks should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Mass's Hall of Fame ballot. Who'd he vote? vote for and why? Did he port Clemens and Barry Bonds and Curt Schilling because he's a douche? Oh, it's Maz's Hall of Fame ballot. Who'd he vote for and why? He doesn't even cover the Red Sox anymore, but he's still in the BBWA.
So no one got voted in last night, Maz, which I actually love. I love because, you know, like you, I'm a small hall guy. I'm such a small hall guy. My hall is actually a closet. It's a broom closet. I don't want anyone in these. You know, I just believe it's got to be saved for the rarest of the rare. I mean, you've heard me talk about this. I think the Boston Bruins should have two numbers retired up there. Three at the most. At the most. Oren Bork. If you want to argue like Espo or Milt Schmidt, maybe. Otherwise, I'd really just want two numbers up there. And the Celtics, never mind the 14 or 45 guys they have up there. They should have like three or four. Russell, Bird, Kuzi, Pynton, that's it. The rest need not apply. Like, I don't want anyone in there. So the fact that, you know, these writers didn't just throw people in there, I actually love. So I'm happy that no one got voted in. I think there should be a lot of years. I think most years no one should be voted in, frankly. I think most years, it should be nobody. Jeter, yep. Rivera, yep. Randy Johnson, yep. Okay, like, the rest of them, no. So, like, I'm a no on everybody. But, you know, if Mike Mussina is going to be in, then Curt Schilling has to be in. I would vote him in. But it's the steroid guys, really, that, you know, now look like they're not going to get voted in. Right, Maz? It's not. There was a trend that maybe it was going to happen. Now you'd say probably not, right?
I would say probably not, except David Ortiz comes on the ballot next year.
As does Alex Rodriguez.
Correct. So, like, now what? You know, so again, this is, and this was to your point, and look, you know, I'm not blowing sunshine up your ass, but I think you helped set me straight on this, which is, so now we got to pick between the cheaters? Look, if Ortiz is in, Bonds is in, Clemens is in. Okay, let's not get stupid about it. They cheated. The game was corrupt. It was a bad time in the history of the game in terms of lawlessness.
Even if you have trouble.
So you know what? Just vote for the guys who deserve to be in and end it.
Yeah, even if you have trouble with it and you look at yourself some sort of like moral arbiter, and I can't do that because they cheated, Clemens should be in alone for his Red Sox career. And Bonds, by the end of the 90s, should have been in just based on those numbers alone. And then they started using roids when Clemens went to Toronto and then Bonds when his head became nine sizes too big. But based on what they did when they first came into the league with their first teams, they should be in on that alone.
So that's the only beef I would have is the steroid thing. But I'm more than happy for guys not getting in and having no one on.
Oh, yeah.
No
there was a lot of filler on that.
Like, you know, so the class last year, Maz, it is, we'll be inducted this year, is Jeter, and then it's like...
Larry Walker.
Larry Walker? Ted Simmons on a veterans committee? Harold Reynolds on a veterans committee? Like, that ruins the stage for Derek Jeter.
I agree.
Like, that diminishes Derek Jeter, who's the only guy that belongs in there.
Yeah, what I want in the Hall of Fame is I want the gods in there. That's what I want. I don't know any other... To me, that's what it should be. Jeter... You know, and I cite Hank Aaron. Like, that's, to me, what the Hall of Fame is. I want the 1% of the 1%. Like, literally 1 in 1,000. Okay? Scott Rolen insults me too, Murray. Scott Rolen was a good player. The bars are filled with good players. There's a million of them I could give you. Mo Vaughn was a good player. You want to put him in, too? Like, once we start going down that road, forget it.
Okay. Billy Lanny's shaking his head. Yes, I can tell right now. The hit dog, Billy. You think he's in, right? So it opens up this whole thing. But Schilling is the one that, again, is probably at the top of the list. Anyway, let's get to the calls as promised. Alex and Needham. Go ahead, Alex.
Hey, guys. I was just thinking about comparing Schilling to another Boston sports. What about Kevin Garnett? I mean, a guy who came in and was super important to a very important championship and, you know, talk about not having to buy a drink or a meal. I mean, I feel like Kevin Garnett's in that conversation. I'll hang up and listen.
Absolutely. Exalted. I mean, by the way, and Kevin Garnett is, like, really apolitical. I mean, Curt Schilling could be a little political. Right. Like, I don't think we'd hold that against him. Some people would, but for the most part, he'd still be Curt Schilling. He'd still be a hero in this. The guy should be an absolute hero in this town. He should be in the Hall of Fame. He should be a highly paid baseball media guy because he was excellent at that. He should be sort of in semi-retirement where he has this role as sort of an emeritus sort of, you know, I don't know. I think A-Rod has landed brilliantly on his feet, you know, and he was a douche when he played. I like Alex Rodriguez so much more in his post-playing career than I did in his playing career. I'll even be honest. I even think him and J-Lo are kind of cute, Murray. I like that couple.
Yeah, there is a likability factor to him, which makes me feel like based, you know, on how we what we know about him in the past, he's probably been coached up. They probably hired a PR team. But he is more likable than he was just a handful of years ago.
So maybe he's a phony. Maybe he's a fraud. Whatever. All I'm saying about Schilling is all he had to do, and it, you know, I'll give him the advice. He's not going to follow it. No, you know, he never has. But it's his biggest problem. All he has to do, all he would have had to have done is hit save instead of send.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you ever do it? It's like, we all do. We all get angry. You all want to go back and forth. You all want to lash out. So you write it. You write it out. Don't hit send.
Write it and delete it. I do it all the time.
Don't hit send. Hit save. Hit save, not send. Go to bed, wake up, and then read it. And then figure out if you want to send it or not. 95% of the time, you'll delete it. And you got it out, and now it's the next day, and you know what? Everyone's forgotten about it. Get on with your day. And, oh, my God, if he had just done that, he'd have a really wonderful life.
Yeah.
He really would.
I mean, again, it's, you know, I'll tell you what. He's accomplished a lot, right? His whole reason for coming here was to put an end to the 86-year drought, and he succeeded. I mean, if you think about it, like that moment alone, independent of 0-1 with Arizona, in which he was nails, by the way, and took down the Yankees in that one too. But just 0-4, that one game, Mike, should have been for him what Mike Ruzioni should have been in the, you know, was from the 80 Olympic game. More.
I mean, that's all he had to do. I mean, he could have been Mike Aroney on steroids. Mike Ruzioni, you know, plus whatever. Because it was a more important championship to more people, I think. And he can't get out of his own way. Because he can't help himself. Can't not scratch a itch. He has to press send. He can't press save.
Unbelievable.
I mean, even this letter here, it's like, oh, it just screams of someone just venting at the keyboard. It's like, you know, the way he starts this thing. And he's sending it to these guys at the Hall of Fame like he has a correspondence with them in, you know, in some way, shape, or form. And it starts off with, hey, guys, couple things. And I can just tell the guys at the Hall of Fame open that up and go, oh, God, here we go, couple things. When Kurt says a couple things.
Going to be another while.
How much time do we have? Like, here we go. Yeah, hey, guys, couple things. Next thing you know, 3,000 words later, you know, after he's taken on the media and Clemens and Bonds and the Red Sox and airing all of his grievances. It's like, oh, brother, here we go. You just know those poor guys at the Hall of Fame are like, oh, God, couple of things. Mike in the car on Schilling. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, guys. I just think that Curt Schilling gets painted with a broad brush. I'm not saying I agree with everything he says, but the guy has been through a lot. I mean, currently his wife is battling breast cancer. I mean, he's dealt with cancer himself. I understand he's a loudmouth. He says a lot of things on social media that maybe a lot of people disagree with, but why can't people look past that and just appreciate the fact that he came here and broke the curse? I mean, it just seems like it's every time Curt Schilling says anything, nobody really appreciates everything he's done for not only this city, but for baseball. Just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on that.
Well, as Mass pointed out, Mike, 70% of the voters do. 70%, 7 out of 10 guys actually do look past it and do appreciate it and do believe he should be a Hall of Famer. So it's not like he's, you know, roundly rejected. He's rejected by, well, 30% of the Hall of Fame voters, and I don't know whatever percentage of Red Sox fans you want to put on that. 40%, 50%, 60%, I don't know. Whatever it is. He's rejected by a portion of Red Sox fans. The fact is, he just can't let that go. Like, you know, he just can't handle his critics. He just can't turn the page, shut the phone off. He's got to go to war with whatever percentage is against him, and it blows the whole thing up. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
I mean, that's really it when you think about it. And you say, okay, they didn't vote him in. You know, these people who are blacklisting me. It's 3 out of 10. It's 3 out of 10. There are always 3 a-holes in every crowd. And in the BBWA, the number's closer to 5. Okay? It's half and half. And I say that lovingly and, you know, seriously at the same time. But 7 out of 10. I mean, in spite of it all, He was 16 votes away. That's a lot of people who said it doesn't matter. That's a lot. Like, I don't know what he's battling. I told you, I think at the end of the day, he's pissed that he made some bad decisions in his life and he's taking it out on everybody else. And I have compassion for that because I respect what the guy did as a competitor. But, like, you can't save someone from themselves. You just, it's not possible.
Here's Murray's update. We come back with a quick Bruins minute.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Mass.
Mike, you there?
Yeah, good. Hold on, I have a landline. This is my landline, yep.
Now, more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
2-0 for the Bruins. Out of the line, right side, Smith into the right circle to Krejci and Smith. He scores! Craig Smith with 11 seconds left in overtime wins it for the Bruins, 3-2. The Boston Bruins have now reeled off wins in three consecutive games as they pick up another 2 points and up their record this year to 4-1-1.
Yeah, haven't done much Bruins so far this season, so let's give you a quick Bruins minute. Maz, you got a couple list of things you want to get to before I go?
Well, look, I would say I'm happy that they've turned it around. They're playing well. I think their defense, they're the exact opposite of what I thought they would be. They're playing better defensively and worse offensively, and I thought their forward group was the strength of the team. And so, look, I'm happy they turned it around. I think the last few games have been better, but I will say I heard, Billy Jaffe this morning talking about the fact that they're starting to, you know, score and the forwards are producing. They're still not scoring. You know, last night they didn't score even strength. It was a power play goal. It was a shorthanded goal. It was a 3-on-3. So, they don't have Pastrnak. They still need some work there. But I'm encouraged by what I see. I find them to be entertaining again, and that's good.
Ever since I called them B for boring, they've been anything but. Last night, though, that shouldn't have went the way. It shouldn't have went to overtime. They look gassed in the third period. In these overtimes where Rask, I will say, has been excellent, they give up way too many crazy chances. Some of these guys like Craig Smith, he's looked pretty good so far. And Richie, too, has been a nice surprise so far.
Unreal.
Okay, so here's my list. Richie's on it. I think Richie's been the biggest surprise on the team. I mean, he looks like an actual viable NHL forward. I mean,
he does.
Is he their leading scorer? I think he might be.
He's at Marchand, but he's got 6 points in six games.
I was about to call him, like, he looks like a top six guy. I don't know if I want to go that far, but remember what I just said? Freaking load. Disaster he was last year. What a joke he was.
Maybe he's in shape.
I mean, he couldn't move. He's out there, you know, wasting space and time, taking horrible penalties. It's like, oh. And he's been one of the better guys. So he's definitely been the surprise of the season for me. And if that holds, that's a pretty big deal. Because they are lacking in top six talent. And if he is borderline, even with that, that's a piece you didn't have. And you look back and you go, well, maybe that was actually a good trade. Anyone miss Danton Heinen? That was the deal, right?
No.
Heinen for was that it?
No, I don't.
I'm saying I don't miss him at all.
A quiet one. Still doing whatever he's doing it somewhere else. He's doing it very quietly. So that's one thing. Here's another takeaway that they have not missed Chara, or I don't think Krug. I don't think they have. Those were special team specialists. You know, Krug did his best work on the power play, and Chara was obviously a great penalty killer. The Bruins PK this year? Best in the league. It's best in the league. They're killing penalties at a 92% clip. They went 6-for-6 last night. Now, Pittsburgh did score one goal in like that vulnerable minute, as Jack would say. But that's because Rask was flopping around on the ice, which I'll get to in a second. But they haven't missed Chara. You know, and overall, in terms of goals against, they are fourth best in the league. Goals against per game. Zboril and Lozon have taken regular shifts all season long.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't missed a game. I don't know if they've even missed a shift, really. And They're fourth in the league in goals against. Goals against is not this team's problem. The play in their own end, not their problem. They don't miss Chara yet. You know, it's super early. Like, you know, obviously, get back to me. But my big worry this year, Maz, I think you said it, was all those kids in back there, and it's a fire drill back there, and all of a sudden they're giving up goals, and they don't have the scoring punch up front to keep pace with that, and they're going to get behind early in this new format, and there you go. There's the season. And it just hasn't happened that way. It just hasn't. They've been good in their own end. Those new guys haven't, you know. Oh, by the way, their power play is still good. Power play is fifth in the league through 2 weeks. So they're scoring on the power play without Krug. They're defending on the PK without Chara. They don't miss those guys. They don't miss them.
No, and I'll tell you, I was just looking it up, too. One thing with Richie is that I think 5 of his 6 points have come on the power play. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but, you know, just something to stash away. So, and he's been valuable for them there. And, look, again, the big thing to me, though, is the play of those young guys on defense. I thought they were going to have a lot of problems back there.
You know, and it's not like, again, it's not like they wow you. It's not like you're going to go, whoa, you know, look at that. You know, look at that guy. Look at that Zboril move. It's like, you know, they're sort of quiet, which I think you want. You know, for most defensemen, if you don't notice them, that's good. And that's where I think Zboril and Lozon have been. So that has worked for them so far. Rask, he bugged me last night. Bugged me. Even though he made game savers. He made some tremendous saves that saved the game. And he's been really good all year. I just hated the whole thing. I thought he got tired in the third period, Murray, or something.
Yeah, what was that cramp thing?
Okay, so... So the first goal is done at the end of a power play, and Rask fell to his stomach, lost his stick or threw his stick, and then got up grabbing his glute like he had, you know, you thought he was hurt, like he strained a glute or
a
hip.
I thought it was a groin thing. You know, he's had that issue in the past.
I thought it was a hip. That's what I thought. Yeah,
hip,
go ahead.
Sports hernia or something. It's like, uh-oh, he can't even get up. And he gets up. They keep him in the game. And then I thought he was really laboring. I felt just watching him. And that tying goal, that former Leaf, whatever his name was.
Yeah, Martin, yeah.
Whoever. Lightning, whoever that was. I thought that was a really soft goal. You know, I know he came in, you know, sort of on a partial break. It was at a bad angle. All Rask had to do was keep his butterfly, and there was nothing. It wasn't even a shot. It wasn't even a shot. The guy lost control of the puck. He didn't even shoot it. It just sort of came off his stick, and because Rask was loose, it went underneath him. I'm like, well, are you hurt or are you not hurt? And why are we flopping around here now? I don't know. He just sort of bugged me, and I didn't want him to be hurt. I thought he should have been taken off because he was just, you know, but then in the overtime, he made a couple of big saves, caught some good breaks.
Yeah, big time on that three-man breakaway. Have you ever seen that before? Holy crap.
What a
3-0. That was tremendous. So that's sort of my last takeaway, which is I did not appreciate how hard this division is or how hard it's going to be to make the play. It's going to be hard for them to make the playoffs. It's going to be hard. They've lost only once in regulation so far this year. And if they had lost last night, I think they would have been outside of the playoffs. They would have been, you know, below the line. If they had lost in regulation, I want to say, they would have been below the line. These teams are going to be so tightly bunched. And because you're playing all these, you know, two-game sets, it's going to be hard to get 4 points, you know, 4-0 anyway. You know, it's just going to be hard to walk into anywhere and beat a team twice in a row in regulation. So there's going to be so many games where it's you split or you win once in regulation, then once in overtime, so then they get a point, or, you know, you win once in regulation, they win in the shootout, you each get three. You know, I mean, like, I think it's going to be so tightly bunched like that all season long that it's going to be a freaking grind, and there's no nights off against Pittsburgh, Washington, or Philly because they're good, and then there's no nights off against a team like the Islanders because they're coached by Barry Trotz, who's not, you know, Twats?
Quite a Freudian, yeah, Freudian slip there.
Yeah, I think it was intentional.
No, it wasn't.
Oh. But, I give you too much credit for being smart.
He plays such a grunt, you know, like those. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for them to make the playoffs. It's going to be, to me, I think it's going to go down to the wire. And they only have one regulation win. So it's like, you got to get, you need those breaks. You need Pittsburgh to blow that 3-0. You need Malkin to hit the bar on a breakaway in the 3-on-3. They're suddenly winning shootouts this year for some reason.
Unbelievable.
They couldn't leak a drop in that thing for
years. Catch the goal? Speaking of which, the goal DeBrusque scored in the shootout the last time they played. Did you see that?
So nifty.
Holy crap, where did that come from? Seriously, since when does he like give you a little drop shot and dropping it in the net like that? What was that?
So, I mean, I did not appreciate how hard. I think it's going to be hard for them to make the playoffs. They could have a good year and miss the playoffs. You know, I mean, not a debacle of a year and miss the playoffs, because I think it's going to be hard. But all in all, I think they've had a good start. You know, I was worried about those guys in back two. Could have been real ugly with those new guys being worked in there. And it hasn't. They've kept their head above water. And so it looks like we'll have a hockey season, you know, which is, that's a start. And then we'll go from there. And then when they choke again in the playoffs, we can bash them if they get there. But the first step was, are we going to have a season? I think we're going to have one. So there's your Bruins Minute. I promise, back to your phones on everything right after this.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And streaming anywhere you go on the Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone. Take it a time.
Oh, my gosh. It was unbelievable.
It's Felger and Mass.
So why don't you just do that? Just do that then.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub and now the radio.com app.
Kapanen and shoots. Rask slides across. Made the save. Went down awkwardly. Now scrambles up. They score. Rask is down. He's in hurt. Some discomfort as Zucker snaps it in. A power play goal. Or actually, it came just after the power play expired, and the Bruins lead sliced to 2-1.
Yeah, Rask is in a lot of pain right now. Zucker had an open net. Rask flailed at one shot that came from the other side, and as he was trying to recover, he just wasn't able to get up. So he's down around the front of the net. He had to extend on the first save. He's not able to get up, and he's in a lot of pain and can't get himself reset. So he moved to his right, and he never really recovered after that.
Rask is still between the pipes to our left. The gate and the Bruins bench is still open. Halak has not reached for his helmet. Rask is going to stay out there.
And he stayed out there. And I thought he was on his knees the rest of the game, like kind of laboring. And I thought the game tying goal was a weak goal. I was like, are you hurt? And if you're not hurt, then you kind of gave up on that play or what? What just happened there?
I was confused. I was confused by that too. And you're right about the second goal. I remember thinking the same thing last night. He lifted up his pad. The puck went right under it.
Soft. He just played it softly. And I'm not telling you like he sucked in the game. He was big in the game, and he's been really good so far this year. It was just that sort of sequence. And then I said, okay, well, maybe he did get hurt on that first thing, and he was hurting because it looked like he was hurting. So he was either hurting or sort of giving up, which I it's just the opposite. My guess, Maz, he tweaked something, but he's staying out there this year because it's a contract year and it's a prove it year, and this is just a little indication of it. I'm not coming off.
Yeah, maybe. And I hadn't thought of that. I thought that he just cramped up and it went away and he was fine, and he kind of, you know, I thought he was half embarrassed for, you know, laying on his belly there in the crease.
That's probably the real reason. It was just a cramp and it passed or something. It's much more interesting, I think, to say it's some sort of conspiracy.
Yeah,
it's some sort of there's some sort of ulterior motive there.
Yeah, and something so deeper at work.
That's what I'm going to go with. There's something deeper at work there.
It's false Rask conspiracy.
It's a contract year. He knows that there's questions about his durability or stamina or ability to hang in there. You know, however you want to phrase that, and so he's not coming off this year. I don't know. Maybe something like that. Either way, it just sort of bugged me. If you weren't hurt, why were you flopping around on your stomach like that and playing that last goal like that? All right, so this and the Hall of Fame stuff. We still have some Red Sox stuff to get to, but to you right here, Brian in Fitchburg. Go ahead, Brian.
You sat on your ass while Toffoli and Hoffman signed team-friendly deals this season. You didn't even pick the phone up to inquire about Lonnie in Winnipeg. But yet we're now witnessing another two guys in DeBrusque, Kassian, and as well as Sednica, just become completely useless on that second line. Is it the wingers or is it Krejci? I'm starting to think that David Krejci is the Taylor Swift of the NHL.
Okay, so line A went for Dubois in Columbus, who was like the third overall pick. So what if that was the trade for line A there in Winnipeg? What are you giving up? You don't. What you have to give up? McAvoy.
Yeah, right. So, I was just gonna say that McAvoy.
So you're gonna rip Don Sweeney for not trading? I mean, okay, if you want to. And yeah, they, you know, this team, I look at them and I like a lot of the, you know, Richie's look good for him and Fredericks look good and Stunica and but they can't score. So it goes back to why do I like them if they can't score? And, you know, I mean, I don't know. Let's see how it plays out. I thought they'd be in worse shape than they are.
Me too. So, yeah, and I will say, look, they, you know, that I am a little worried about the attrition, you know, between Kasha and DeBrusk and Pasternak's out, although it sounds like he might play this weekend. Like, you know, you can't lose that many wingers. I mean, you're wiping them out on every line for crying out loud.
David in New Bedford on the Hall of Fame voting. Go ahead, Dave.
Yes, I was wondering your thoughts. If they vote in Ortiz next year, how is that going to look when they didn't vote in Schilling and Clemens? Thank you.
But Schilling's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
Clemens and Bonds will be, you know, you voted against Clemens and Bonds, but you voted for David Ortiz. Huh? Like, yeah. There'd be some pretzel twisting on that one, Maz.
Oh, get ready for it. Because, again, it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. Ortiz is going to get in. And so this is where, again, the popularity comes in or the technicalities come in. Well, you know, Ortiz didn't actually fail a test. It was a sample test. It wasn't a real test. It was a, you know, it was a, what do they call it? Survey testing or whatever it was at that time. And so they're going to, you know, you'll hear all that kind of crap when the reality is, well, were you cheating or were you not? Like, independent of what the rules were and, you know, who was probably doing it and who wasn't.
Yeah, there's no shades of gray. You either put these guys in or you don't. So pull the Band-Aid off and put those guys in next year. If you're going to put in Ortiz and Rodriguez, then you have to put in Bonds. You have to put in Clemens. You have to put in Ramirez. You want to make a case for Gary Sheffield, any of these guys. If you're going to put one or two in, they all got to go in.
How can you have a baseball Hall of Fame without Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds?
So
come on.
I mean, seriously. Like, what are we doing?
Did those guys get less votes than they did the year before?
No, I think they both went up a little bit. But
just a little.
Yeah, and the problem is that next year, you know, you see this oftentimes when good guys come on the ballot, everybody's vote totals go down.
But Manny had less.
Oh, Manny went down?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, and so I didn't even check.
All I'm saying is
he has no hope.
This wave, or the alleged wave that I thought we were going to get where sort of older voters come off the rolls, younger guys come on, you know, you'd see this momentum, this thing building towards the end of Clemens and Bonds' candidacy, and you're not seeing it, right? I mean, I guess that's what I'm talking about. Whether votes went up or down, I'm not seeing this momentum building towards them getting in.
No, yeah. And I'm sorry to cut you off, Maz, but I'm of the belief that what you're seeing with some of these younger voters, they're the ones that are voting for the Scott Rolands of the world because they want to make a case with their nerd stats as to why someone like that should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Good zone rating or something? So, yeah. All right, let's pick up your calls first. A 90-second update from Murray. No commercials, and we're right back with you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.